WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Cameron Crowe says he's had enough of high school, and he hopes that with his new film, he's graduated with dignity. Crowe wrote and directed the new teen film Say Anything, starring John Cusack. Crowe talked with us about that movie on The Last Fresh Air. Today we talk about how he went undercover to write his first book and screenplay, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Crowe says the idea came from a former editor of his at Rolling Stone. Since Crowe was always writing about teenage rock music fans, the editor suggested Crowe write about other parts of their lives. To do the research, Crowe posed as a student for 1 year at a Southern California high school. He was 22 then, just a few years out of high school himself, but the scene had changed a lot since his high school days.
Oh boy, it seemed like a universe of difference. It was all of a sudden this emphasis on lifestyle, on clothes, and stereo equipment and concert tickets and all that stuff. But instead of going to mom and dad for the money, it was pushing themselves to make the money. And I really feel that I got to witness the birth of Reagan youth firsthand, because it was such a shock at the time to see all these young Alex Keatons popping up. And it was only later that, you know, Michael J. Fox made that character on Family Ties famous. But at the time, I remember seeing it and going, boy, this is a character that was ripe. But it was so funny that they were all interested in getting jobs and becoming adults at these young ages, which led to a false sense of knowing what it was to be an adult. So Fast Times was a lot of fun to write because, you know, I got to write about all the little problems that happen when you truly think you're in charge and you're 16 or 17.
Did anything betray you as an adult when you were there?
Well, you know, my mother, once again, being a teacher, felt that fifth grade, first grade, and 12th grade were unnecessary. So I was skipped all these grades and never had a senior year. So for me, you know, I was much more of an adolescent than I was the first time around. So really, I fell in with a fast food group, and the guy that was played by Judge Reinhold in the movie, mm-hmm. that character in real life was my buddy. And the only guy I really told what I was doing to was the ticket scalper, because, you know, we talk about rock so much of the time that, you know, I just decided to tell him one day. And, you know, he was very cool about it. I don't think too many of them really believed that it was ever going to come out as an article, book, or movie, anything. And then when it came out, I just remember them all calling me, or I'd see them and they'd say, how'd you squeeze this out of our school? You know? So I was accepted pretty well. And it's only through, you know, the last year where I've been directing this movie that I've aged considerably. No, I'm just kidding.
One of the big issues in high school is sex and who has had it and who hasn't. You were obviously, well, I assume more sexually mature than a lot of the, more sexually experienced than a lot of the kids you were with when you were posing as a high school student.
You might not want to assume that. my girlfriend had dumped me, actually, you know, a couple of months before this offer to write the book came up. So it was like, yes, I'll leave town and go write a book. So a lot of the time was spent, I didn't even let you ask your question, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
A lot of the time was spent just kind of, you know, privately moping. And actually, though, there were a few girls that liked me, which was pretty nice. But
were they officially off limits to you, though? Did you sign an agreement that you wouldn't have relationships with the girls there in the high school?
Yeah, there was a morality clause in my contract. But, you know, I'm not George Hamilton Jr., so it wasn't really a problem.
Sean Penn was one of the leads in the movie version of Fast Times at Ridgemont High. What was your first reaction to him when you saw him cast in the role? This movie really helped make his film career. Everybody noticed him in the film.
It's an interesting story. I always thought that character, the classic Southern California surfer, should have been played. You know, I thought, well, this character has got to be played by a guy who doesn't get the joke. You know, let's just get a guy off a bus bench and just, like, have him say the lines. It'll be great. And this is what I used to say. And, you know, of course you couldn't really do that because you do need an actor and all that. But I was so intent on getting this character real. Well, one day we're walking across to go to this room where we're casting, and this black firebird actually almost runs me over, you know, and it was like a deliberate kind of power move by the guy behind the wheel. And, you know, I didn't think too much of it. I went up into this office, and who walks in to read for this part a minute later but Sean Penn? And he looked at me, and he goes, "Oh, man, sorry I did that. You know, I thought you were up for the part." So it was like already I wasn't sure about this guy, you know. But then he started to talk about what the part was and how he'd grown up with people in Malibu that were just like that. And you just knew there were three of us in the room, and he didn't even read for it, but just him talking about it and the way he looked, we all got this simultaneous feeling that it had to be him. And so we signed him up to play the part, not even ever hearing him do the surfer voice. And, you know, I used to go out for pizza with him and everything and just say, you know, do the voice. And he'd say, "No. No, no." But then when time came to do these scenes, he was remarkable.
What Jefferson was saying was, "Hey, you know, we left this England place because it was bogus. So if we don't get some cool rules ourselves, pronto, we'll just be bogus too." Yeah?
Very close, Jeff.
Mr. Han, do you have a guy like me in class every year? You know, a guy who you make an example of?
You'll find out next year.
No way. As soon as I cruise history, I'm not coming near your side of the building.
Cruise history?
As soon as I pass your class.
If you pass.
Val, you're gonna flunk me?
Don't worry, Spicoli. You'll probably squeak by.
Yeah. Aloha, Mr. Han.
And he did the whole thing in character. We all called him Jeff. No one knew him as Sean. He felt like he was an outcast. The character was an outcast, so he kept himself an outcast with the other cast members. And the funny thing was, the day he finished shooting, he left for a few hours, and he came back, and he was wearing this kind of bad velvetish jacket and these wingtips and a button-down shirt, and he just kind of went around to everyone and said, "I'm Sean, and I'm really pleased to have worked with you." And we're going, "Bring Jeff back. Where's that other guy? Come on." And he said, "Well, Jeff lives forever on the screen." And it was so great to hear this guy who was just so into it. And I think he was 19 or something at the time. It was just an intense little experience with Sean. And then when we put the movie together, he jumped out so much that, you know, we kind of built the ads around him and everything. And it was great. It was a breakout performance for him.
Are you still doing any rock journalism?
Yes, I am. I spoke to Jan Wenner the other day. I really want to do some articles for Rolling Stone again.
You started writing for Rolling Stone, I think, when you were 17 or something?
15.
15. I guess. You must have seemed pretty precocious. Were you the kid that they'd find out what kids like from?
No, I was the one that would go on the road with Black Sabbath. No one else would do it, you know. I was the one that would ask Ozzy Osbourne about Iron Man and songs like that, you know. I think they were just grateful that there was someone that would do that for them, and so I'd string for them and do articles about, you know, the groups I really loved. And Ben Fong-Torres, who was the editor who gave me all the assignments, was just happy because he said, "Everyone here in the San Francisco office, we like Dan Hicks and Van Morrison, and it's not what they're buying right now. So, you know, can you give us an article on Jethro Tull?" And I'd be, "Jethro Tull? You bet!" You know, so it was fun.
Has your taste improved over the years?
Ouch! I hope so.
Okay, well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.